This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This is not systemic reform or even really token reform. It's just a new facade to an old system that doesn't really respond to the events that brought him to power.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, on Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune's call for early legislative elections. Details coming up also. For the first time, the 193 UN member states will deliver their annual speeches on videotape. And Cameroon police have surrounded the home of opposition leader Maurice Kamto and detained an unknown number of his supporters. Those stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is among six African leaders scheduled to address the UN General Assembly today as it opens its 75th session with COVID-19 on everyone's minds. For the first time, the 193 UN member states will deliver their annual speeches on videotape instead of in person due to the pandemic. The only attendees in the General Assembly Hall will be a single masked envoy representing each member. The first day of speeches include the leaders of some of the countries most affected by COVID-19, the United States, Brazil, China, and South Africa, along with Russia and France. Confirmed coronavirus cases worldwide have surpassed 31 million, with more than 960,000 deaths, according to the Johns Hopkins University, which tracks the data. Also on today's agenda are speakers from Egypt, Rwanda, Angola, Nigeria, and Madagascar. Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune has called for early legislative elections by the end of the year to open parliament to civil society and give a new face to a legislature long dominated by a single party. He said a referendum on a constitutional revision is to be held on November 1st, which coincides with the anniversary of the start of Algeria's independence war against France in 1954. However, experts doubt he is introducing real democratic reforms. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, explained the reasons behind the move to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
President Tebboune was elected with the lowest percentage of eligible voters in the history of Algeria amidst an election boycott by Algerians who didn't agree with the constitutional basis for elections and who wanted systemic change. His election was provoked by the popular movement, the Hirak, but then since he was elected, he has been doing everything he can to gain power at the expense of that movement, including the current crackdown going on, both of leaders and followers of the movement, but also of journalists who've written sympathetically about it. So, for example, one journalist just got a sentence upheld for 2 years in prison for criticizing the regime in favor of the Hirak movement. So he's trying to gain and consolidate power, not by winning hearts and minds, but by forcing civil society to back down while he pushes through political actions. So this won't be an opening to civil society because it's happening during a crackdown on civil society. It's not a democratic move. It's an authoritarian move. And in the midst of this, we're having the whole COVID-19 situation, which is keeping Algerians relatively locked down. And so it won't be until that situation's addressed that I think the population's going to be willing to go along with any political reforms or political process that he proposes.
President Tebboune said a national referendum on a constitutional revision is to be held on November 1st. Does that mean the popular uprising demands for a new political system or just a token reform?
It's at best a token reform, but I would say it isn't even really that. Last year, the 65th anniversary of the revolution, we saw the largest protests we had seen in many months, the 37th consecutive week of protests with tens of thousands of people out. And that was against the very elections that he's trying to put into place now and that he was elected by. So this is not systemic reform or even really token reform. It's just a new facade to an old system that doesn't really respond to the events that brought him to power.
With a new Algerian parliament and a revised constitution, along with a continuous crackdown, where do you see Algeria heading?
Well, the opposition has announced a large planned protest on October 10th. And it'll be interesting to see during COVID and with the crackdown that's going on of the leadership of the Herak, whether there's a large turnout or a small turnout. There's no question that the pandemic is working in his favor, that he's trying to push through a set of political moves during the pandemic, and that once the pandemic is passed, there'll be another social explosion. I think the main question right now is the economy. If the Algerian government continues to do little to bolster the economic fortunes of Algerians, then when the crowds are back out, they'll be relatively large. But if the Algerian government manages to address the economic malaise of the current situation, both by going forward with economic reforms everybody in Algeria wants and maintaining a social safety net to help the worst afflicted Algerians, he could gain some hearts and minds and some support. But right now, there's no evidence that substantial economic reforms are going to take place. And with no political reforms, this won't go well over the longer term for the regime.
How about the rampant corruption in Algeria that was fought against by the demonstrators for so many months?
Well, ostensibly, these elections are supposed to be anti-corruption, and they're supposed to bring in a new collection of parliamentarians. But the problem is, when you bring uncorrupt people into a corrupt system, a system of patronage whereby having a seat in parliament allows you to gain personal and collective economic benefit for the people around you that doesn't necessarily represent the social programs and the political programs that people actually want to happen, you haven't really reformed the system. You've just replaced the members of the system. And so far, the anti-corruption measures have been not against all corruption or all corrupt people. It's been against a small group of corrupt people around the former president, two former prime ministers, some wealthy businessmen, but not towards dealing with the larger issues of systemic corruption. There's no indication that this president himself or the military people around him are particularly corrupt, but there's a continuing system of corruption among retired military people, a wider network of current military people and intelligence people, and the larger, what the Algerians call the pouvoir or the establishment, that continues in its corrupt oligopolistic ways. And there's no indication that will change anytime soon.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Cameroon police have surrounded the home of opposition leader Maurice Kamto and detained an unknown number of his supporters. Kamto, who accuses President Paul Biya of stealing the 2018 presidential election from him, called for protests today against regional elections and Biya's leadership of the country. As Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, authorities deployed riot police and troops, some of whom used tear gas on the protesters.
The opposition Cameroon Renaissance Movement, CRM, says riot police and military troops on Monday night forced themselves into the home of party leader Maurice Kamto. The secretary general of the CRM, Christophe Andong, says police detained a number of their supporters, including Alain Fogwe, the party's legal advisor.
They arrested Professor Fogwe and some militants who were there. They had some pieces, and Kamto came out and told them that they would not stop him. So we are going to march. We are not afraid of arrest because we know what we are doing is within the ambit of the constitution. It is our right to manifest, and our march is peaceful.
Ndong says police detained an unknown number of people and took them to unknown locations. CRM leader Kamto, he says, was neither beaten nor detained. But security has surrounded his home, and there is concern that if he leaves, he could be arrested. Ndong says police also detained opposition supporters in Cameroon's coastal city of Douala, where they used tear gas on protesters, and in towns in the west and north. Despite the detentions and heavy security, many protesters assembled at intersections early Tuesday. some of them calling for Biya to step down. Biya has been president since 1982, making him one of Africa's longest-serving leaders. 55-year-old bookseller Thomas Ekwele says not even riot police will stop him from freely expressing himself and protesting peacefully.
If you look up there are anti-riot police, about 70 of them, carrying guns and tear gas. It's a sign of intimidation. Many people close their shops to go on the street because it's too much. Somebody cannot take captivity of the country for more than 40 years.
Kamto calls for the protest to pressure Biya to stop regional elections scheduled for November 6. He claims the electoral code favors only Biya, who the opposition blames for the separatist conflict in Cameroon's western regions. The conflict between Anglophone rebels and Cameroon's military has left at least 3,000 people dead since 2017. Kamto has called for weekly protests until Biya cancels the polls. Cameroon government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says Kamto's party wants to start a revolt in the country.
The government considers that the CRM, which has voluntarily put itself outside the political game and which, moreover, cannot claim any representation within the Republican institutions, cannot grant itself the right or the legitimacy vested in the President of the Republic, His Excellency Paul Biya, alone to determine the national political agenda.
In January 2019, police detained Kamto and 200 of his supporters for insisting that Biya stole the 2018 presidential election. After international criticism, Biya pardoned Kamto last November and had him released. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Africa has passed a new law to stem illegal migration into the continent's second largest economy. It makes provision for the establishment of a border management authority to enforce strong border controls, prevent undocumented migration, and strengthen legitimate trade. But critics are calling the move militarization of South Africa's borders and say it will fail to achieve its objectives. Darren Taylor has more.
No one knows how many illegal or undocumented migrants are in South Africa. It's been almost a decade since the government tried to count them. Then it estimated there were at least 2 million from across Africa, but most from neighboring Zimbabwe, fleeing economic collapse and political repression. The South African government insists the migrants pose socio-economic and security dangers. It says the new law will keep the illegals out with sophisticated military technologies, such as drones and infrared equipment to detect body heat, along with more soldiers and police and reinforced walls and fences. None of this will work, says University of Zululand migration analyst Innocent Moyo.
People have their own ways of contesting the border. The border is not fixed. It can be made, remade, and unmade. People will always find ways of actually crossing the border. There is no way of actually stopping undocumented migration in that regard.
Dr. Moyo points out that Africa isn't Europe. There are subtleties at play here that South African authorities are ignoring.
It is good to control borders. Every country must actually, of necessity, actually do that. But in an African context, particularly in Southern Africa, where the borders are colonial as much as they are contiguous and also artificial, we must understand the historical context to migration in the region.
Even without this context, says Moyo, people who are so desperate to escape poverty and violence that they swim across crocodile-infested rivers will always find ways into much more stable South Africa.
Most of the undocumented migrants in South Africa, they come from, you know, the SADC region to start with. My argument is that you have undocumented migrants because of, you know, stringent immigration and migration regimes.
Moyo says he's not suggesting that South Africa simply throws open its borders. Instead, he's calling for the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, to confront the causes of illegal migration. Moyo says the two main drivers are bad governance and human rights violations, especially in Zimbabwe and Mozambique. Instead of addressing these, he says the South African government has chosen the easier path of militarizing borders and criminalizing migrants. Moyo adds that while SADC should have a unified approach to undocumented migration, the opposite is happening.
One country enforces the borders, but the rest of other countries don't do anything about that. Countries are so fixed on upholding their territorial sovereignties. Of necessity, regional integration means exactly that. You surrender sovereignty in place of supranational institutions. Countries are reluctant to move in that direction where we have supranational institutions that actually govern migration.
He feels a regional mechanism to deal with undocumented migration is the only way forward, not for South Africa to go it alone in its own narrow self-interest.
It's not something that is easy, but it needs to be done. It has to be done. Because if it is not done, and we move in the way that we are doing, it's not going to solve the problem. You know, you fortify borders, people find ways of crossing the borders.
Moyo's vision is for SADC to eventually implement a protocol on the free movement of citizens across borders, which it adopted almost 30 years ago. But he knows this can only happen once other Southern African countries, Zimbabwe in particular, are in better shape. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Sudan this month declared an economic emergency after the Sudanese pound lost 40% of its value in 1 month and annual inflation jumped to 167%. Sudan's transitional authorities have struggled to stabilize the currency, the weakness of which helped fuel the protests against former President Omar al-Bashir. The economic strain has hit traders in the Sajana market, one of Sudan's largest, as Naba Muhaddin reports from Khartoum.
Sudan declared an economic emergency this month as the Sudanese pound blinked in value and inflation soared. The pound, which traded at 135 to the U.S. dollar in August, dropped to 250 per U.S. dollar. The economic strain has hit traders in Khartoum's Sajana market, where many businesses sell imported goods. Most of the market has stopped purchasing fresh inventory, as prices soared and goods are overstocked in shops and factories. Trader Khalifa Mukashfi says he's been forced to close his shop selling light bulbs due to the poor exchange rate. He says they suffer a lot from the exchange rate and the increased value of the dollar compared to the drop in the Sudanese pound. Mukashfi says local traders buy from importers who pay with U.S. dollars and the price is always changing. They can't meet the changing market price, he says, unless they increase their own prices as the Sudanese pound has sharply dropped. Economic analysts blame the pound's fall on government policies that prompted Sudanese to withdraw money from banks and buy U.S. dollars on the black market. Analyst Nair Mohammed says the policies include increases in fuel and gasoline prices, the second this year, as well as tariffs on imports. Mohammed says once the policies were declared, the market dropped the value of the Sudanese pound compared to foreign currencies. Many Sudanese food manufacturers have also stopped production and distribution, leading to a scarcity of goods and higher prices. Food shop owner Al-Hadi Muhiddin says his shelves are becoming bare as many suppliers stop deliveries. He says most of the companies have stopped working completely. Those that still work have doubled their prices, says Muhiddin, but only operate half as much as before. Even if you buy goods, he says, you will see the price double the next day. Sudanese officials are expected to hold talks with the United States in the United Arab Emirates this week. Sudan wants the country removed from the U.S. list of states that sponsor terrorism. Removal from the list would open Sudan's access to international funding and help start the country's economic recovery. Naba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Schools in Somalia have reopened after being closed for 4 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. But as the new academic year begins, things don't look anything like they did before. Masks and social distancing are the new norms for pupils. Aid agencies say the COVID-19 pandemic is forcing more girls out of classrooms to meet family needs. Muhammad Yusuf reports for VOA.
15-year-old Nasra Aidarus is happy to be back in class after a 4-month school closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic that hit Somalia. The grade 7 student at Deinale Primary and Secondary School was just settling into her new school when classes were cancelled in March to limit the coronavirus pandemic. Her family came back to Somalia in 2018 after living in Yemen as a refugee for years. She was worried she may never fulfill her dream of becoming a doctor. She says her greatest fear was not to complete her education and to end her bright future there and be married off at a young age because of school closure. In the future, she said she wants to be a doctor so she can help her people. Aidarus is one of 390 students who went back to school in mid-August, but more have yet to report for fear of contracting the virus. Dawood Jiran is a Mercy Corps Somalia's country director. He says the coronavirus pandemic has taken away years of gains, drawing children, mostly girls, into classrooms.
When the schools were going on, girls had a safe space. We understand from the little assessments that we do, the quick assessment that we do, that now girls are being depended on more by the family. So, you know, the burden of supporting the social support to their families has become more. Girl dropouts have really increased. We also see the teenage girls, once they stay at home for long, we see the issue of early marriage increasing. Now, because society is feeling they need support.
Aid agencies say Somalia has one of the world's largest population of children out of school, 2 million out of 5 school-age children. The country's education system has been affected by decades of conflict, displacement, and most recently, the coronavirus. Deinale School Deputy Head Teacher Mahad Dahir Hassan says it is reaching out to the children's families to bring them back to class.
Inta badan way imaadaan iskuulka laakiin haddeertaan qaar ah waxay ku maqan yihiin anaga inuu na sameeyno.
He says some students are avoiding coming to school. They fear contracting the virus. He says they are trying to reach out to the parents and students and assure them that the school is doing everything possible to minimize the virus spread by keeping students apart. He says some students have heeded the call and have reported to the school, but some have yet to report. Though they continue to work to have them back, he said at times they even go to their homes to convince them to return to school. Teachers are doing at least 2 shifts a day after creating more classrooms to limit the spread of COVID-19, which has doubled the work of the few teachers in Somalia's schools. President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo has just inaugurated the national curriculum for secondary schools, bringing an end to 3 decades of multiple non-standardized educational systems in Somalia. Muhammad Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com. voiceofamerica.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.